No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. Hey, you try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth, and I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So pick out the jams, kick up the soul, pour another glass of that rock and roll, turn up the band, find the hole, gonna lose control tonight. What do you want from
Hello, darlings. It is gonna be a gorgeous day. Wow, huh? 12 degrees, lots of sunshine. It's Tuesday, November the 28th. And thank you for coming back to us on Rogers Television. And as always on 570 News, it's so good to have you along. Okay, how'd you get engaged? We're going to do that. Like, I'm still all about the royal engagement. I'm basking in other people's happiness because sometimes this world we live in is a harsh, angry place. So why can't we just find some joy? Even if it's like in rich people who will never meet joy, we're going to find some joy in that. And I really liked the part of the interview last night where Harry and Meghan talked about the way they got engaged. And people loved, it's kind of like a birth story. If you ask any woman who's ever had a baby to tell you her birth story, she'll be like, pull up a chair, grab a glass of wine. I'm going to tell you all about it. We just love to tell them because it's like the human experience. Right? The full human experience, especially in birth stories, because it's kind of, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of joy, there's a lot of happiness. And in the engagement stories, we kind of find a lot of the same things, a lot of joy. People love to talk about them. It's something super memorable that you hopefully you'll never forget. So how did you get engaged? And what is engagement chicken? Did you know engagement chicken was a thing? Apparently this chicken spontaneously causes people to get engaged for men to propose. So if that's something you are interested in being proposed to, we're going to talk about the engagement chicken. And two relatively newlywed men taking care of everything on the other side of the studio here, producer Polly and producer James. I don't actually know how either of them proposed. So maybe they'll share their stories with us coming up. Polly got married in Vegas, so his was probably some raucous, you know, bash on the top of a building or something. I don't know. You know, he's an animal like that. Just kidding. So we'll find out that. Engagement chicken. I know, it's a thing. Just when you thought you'd heard it all. Emotionally intelligent toys. What does that mean? What is an emotionally intelligent toy? It's Christmas. We're going to talk to Ria Lala, who's a parenting coach from buildgreatminds.com, about what those toys are. I'm going to guess that video games might not be on the list, which is terrible for my situation, our situation, and our family, because we have three boys who want to, they want to shoot things and each other, and they also want to build things in Minecraft. And they love video games. So maybe Ria Lala, if you're in the same situation as I am, can give us some good alternatives when it comes to emotionally intelligent toys. Okay, let's talk about this gender pronoun war. We're going to get to that as well. Because here's my point. I don't understand why you care so much. Like, if somebody wants to be called he or she or they, why do you give a flying fado? Why not just call them what they want to be called? Because it's deeper than that, isn't it? And here's the example I used this morning when producer James and I were talking about it. If I say to you, my name is Jennifer, but I prefer Jen, and you continue to call me Jennifer, well, then you're just a jerk. So how is that different when it comes to any other kind of way you refer to someone? Let's talk about that coming up. Great article from Now Magazine about the gender pronoun war. Is it a war? It might be a war. They say it's about freedom for sure, but it's not about free speech. Let's get to that. Coming up at about 9:45. So you can send me your thoughts on any and all of these things. I would love to hear from you, Jennifer at 570news.com, or you can wait until we delve into whichever topic makes your skirt fly up in a good way or a bad way, and then you can give us a call. Also, should be mentioned, too, that amongst all the consuming and the buying and the spending and the frantic Christmas shopping, that today is Giving Tuesday, and that this was introduced 6 years ago. And now it has become a philanthropic phenomenon. Those are two big ones, right? Side by each there. So lots of nonprofits trying to kind of stand out today, which is Giving Tuesday. So they want you to, you know, just kind of try it. We've consumed all weekend. Perhaps you took part in Black Friday or Cyber Monday, and maybe your Christmas shopping is not done, but just a reminder to do something on Giving Tuesday. I saw our friends at the Shore Center are happily accepting donations today on Giving Tuesday, as are all of your favorite charities. So the best way to do it, I suppose, is to pick the one that matters the most to you and resonates in your heart. Maybe when you want your kids to get involved with, kids seem to always like the animal ones. And World Vision has this great program where you can buy farm animals for people in different countries, which can completely change their lives. So if you're thinking about donating to charity this year, maybe shop through some charities today. Figure out which one you want to do for Giving Tuesday. Possibly giving some of our counselors at the city of Kitchener a bit of a headache is where we'll start this morning. Kitchener plans for a $10 million parking garage despite the push to get people out of their cars. And joining us to discuss this right off the top this morning is Yvonne Fernandez, Ward 4 counselor from the city of Kitchener. Yvonne, thanks for coming on with us again. Good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer. I think I want to talk about the engagement one first.
Oh, yes, then. Please. Do you have a great engagement story?
Then we'll get to the garage thing.
Should have just come in studio and co-hosted today, Yvonne.
I should have. I didn't get that much of an invitation. I would have been there.
All right. Well, I'm going to blame shift that over to the men across the room and say you are welcome to put your behind in one of these chairs anytime you wish.
All right. But I'll wait for that invitation.
But do you have a great engagement story?
I do.
Oh, I want to hear it. I want my heart filled with other people's love and joy today. Tell us.
Okay. So my husband. We were just starting to learn how to cross-country ski, and so the two of us headed out. It was Boxing Day, and of course, Christmas, I had a little expected that I was going to get engaged, but nothing happened. So Boxing Day, well, we headed out cross-country skiing just in behind Old Mill Road, and we had been there a couple of times, and it was lovely. But we stopped at I always made hot chocolates. We stopped at the stump to have some hot chocolate, and it had been a cloudy day, and he turned to me and said, I have something I want to ask you. And I looked at him and thought, what are you going to ask me? He pulled out the ring and he said, I want to give you this.
Oh.
And the sun broke out.
Oh.
But he forgot to ask me to marry him. So after I put the ring on and we had, you know, kissed and started skiing, I said, wait, you have to ask me to marry you. Otherwise, down the road, you'll say, I never asked you to marry me.
Oh, so, well, the stump and the ring and the romance, it was kind of inferred, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of inferred. I know, but I, you know what? My husband's Portuguese, and I wanted to make sure that I had him right there.
Oh, Yvonne, I love that.
So 37 years.
37 years. Yeah. Congratulations to
thanks.
You.
Thanks for letting me share, Jennifer.
I love them. I love those stories. And I get the goosebumps when you tell. Is that stump still there?
I don't know, but we continue to cross-country ski.
Well, good.
All the time, and I continue to make hot chocolate and trail mix. So it's become a tradition.
That is lovely. I'm so happy that you shared it with us.
Thanks.
All right, now listen, cross-country skiing is one way to get places, and of course we have people who are excited about the LRT that's going to take them places, and there are still some of us that, you know, are pretty committed to our cars. So when this came up, this $10 million parking garage, were there eyebrows raised within council, within chambers about this? How has this conversation been going?
Right. So, I mean, this is something that's in our capital, our 10-year capital forecast. And so it was noted last year because it, you know, moved up the calendar, so to speak. And there were comments last year about, with LRT coming and us, the push around cycling and the demand, transportation demand management plans that we have, what are we doing talking about parking garage? And especially because Charles and Benton, the one that I tend to pick on all the time, much to staff's chagrin, is only 50% full still. And so I think there was a lot of raised eyebrows last year, and then more so now. I mean, of course, it's a placeholder. We have to keep that as we move forward with our 10-year capital forecast, that now it becomes a bit more with LRT trains ready to hit the tracks soon. We really need to take a look at what are we saying here? Another $10 million parking garage and all of the operating costs that comes with that?
Is this one slated or planned to be farther, like at the other end of the downtown core, away from the one that's at Benton and Charles?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It would
okay.
be, I would say, if people are familiar with where Brougham Street is, somewhere mm-hmm. in that area, the district that we often call Innovation District.
Mm-hmm.
So in that area, you know, where the new Google is, and that there seems to be a gap in parking in that area. And we also don't want to assume that all of our surface lots will still be there
right.
in 2026. They may have been developed as well.
Right, of course. Yeah. Okay. So, and that, you know, I'm thinking as someone who, I mean, I am a car person. I love the LRT, and I think that that's going to be wonderful for, you know, my kids and their kids. And it's probably not going to be something that I use frequently, unless I do a complete and utter mind physical shift, which I know is probably something that I'll be encouraged to do by the city. But, you know, I have three children. I live in the burbs. I live in Forest Heights. I have groceries. I have stuff. I have dog crates. So I haven't quite exactly wrapped my head around that yet. But you're right. I mean, when I think about parking downtown at this point, and I do go downtown a lot, I mean, we've only been up here in our new studios for about a year and a half, but I never really had any problem finding a parking spot in downtown Kitchener. But as you just mentioned, we can't, those surface lots are just not something that's a guarantee. We see that happening with the one behind City Hall.
Right. And I think that's part of what we have to consider. It's got to be a behavior shift. I mean, as you indicated, you live in the suburbs, and I do too. But we can make small changes. You know, I cycle from during the good weather to do all of my errands, and you know, it takes a little bit of thinking and planning. So those little behavior shifts, I think, over the next, you know, 10 years, 8 years, I think we'll start seeing them as people become more comfortable and start thinking differently about where they get places. But I also think that it's important that any development that happens, and I know that there are some of the condos that have this occurring, is that during the day when people leave with their cars to go to work, that some of those spaces are available for people who come downtown to do shopping. So that's a different, another kind of partnership that the city and maybe private landowners can start talking about, instead of building a multiple parking structure. So those are the different ways that we as a city and our community need to start thinking about, do we want to put that on the backs of our taxpayers? That's a huge, it's not just the building of the structure, Jenna, it's mm-hmm. the operation of the structure.
Right, of course, yeah. So that the estimate was by 2031 that the downtown would be short, you know, anywhere between 350 to 590 parking spots, even if the car use drops between 10 and 20%. But you're saying we got to think outside the box on this. What a great idea you just had about those condo parking spots, and perhaps, you know, doing a parking spot share program. That's a very, I've never heard of something mm-hmm. like that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that those are all different kinds of ways of using parking spaces. To me, it's always, you know, seeing those empty parking lots, the surface ones, you know, this yawning asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
And in the evening, as I depart to my suburbs, and yes, I'm guilty of that, using my car for that too, it just seems like a waste of space. There's so much more I think we can do with some of that. And it doesn't always have to be land development. It could be green spaces. It could be areas for event planning. And so, you know, even in the evening, let's do something else with those parking lots.
So this budget's going to be finalized on January 22nd, and this $10 million that's earmarked, this is like, and like you mentioned, we're talking about like a 9-year plan here, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anything, you know, all those big kind of projects, as a municipality, mm-hmm. we have to be smart and think about, you know, the long term. We always do a 10-year capital forecast. And so right now, you know, we can say this is a placeholder, but we also need to build the a bank account. Make sure we have the money. If that needs to come to fruition, we need to put those steps in place now. And then as we get closer and closer to that time period, we should be revisiting, I think, on a regular basis, the need for a $10 million parking lot.
Yvonne Fernandez is the counselor from Ward 4 at the City of Kitchener, and we are always so pleased to have you on. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Take good care. Bye-bye. Okay, let's do those engagement stories. That was lovely. I liked hers a lot. You're not PJ. That's my other co-host. It's Giving Tuesday and it's Tired Tuesday in my brain this morning.
The P is still the same, though.
And
Paul.
You're both Paul.
That's right.
You'd think it would be easier on my brain, Polly. We're going to talk about engagement stories coming up next. I have some great emails from you guys coming in to jennifer@570news.com. And engagement chicken seemed to work for Meghan and Harry. We'll find out all about that after the break on 570 News.
Don't look at your phone. Just listen to us.
Monitoring every traffic source for your safest, fastest traffic solutions. Your traffic team is 570 News. Kitchener's breaking news, traffic, and weather station.
So I already got an email that I'm a bad feminist because I'm talking about how people got engaged. What? You can... Why? If you want to get engaged, you can get engaged, whether you're a man or a woman, and a woman and a woman, or a man or a man. And what? You know what feminism is? Doing whatever the hell you want to do. That's what it is. Are there traditional things about, you know, the ring and the property and whatever? We've evolved, haven't we? Had a great story earlier this morning from someone who proposed to her boyfriend. Who then that happens, maybe not as much as it should or we'd like to see it. But and I'm not going to speak for all women. I'm just going to speak for the woman that I am. But we can be equal and we can be different. I like shiny, glittery things. Does that have something to do with me having a vagina? I have no idea, but I do. I like them. So and I don't think I'm alone in that. And guys like shiny, chromey things with engines and maybe we should do engagement motorcycles or something like that. Maybe that's what we should do. So let's listen to Harry and Meghan Markle's engagement story. They were asked yesterday how the proposal happened, and here's how it went down.
Typical night for us.
It's a cozy night. Just roasting chicken and
trying to roast
the chicken, and it was just an amazing surprise. It was so sweet and natural and very romantic. He got on one knee.
Of course.
Was it an instant yes from you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I could barely let you finish proposing. I said, can I say yes now?
She didn't even let me finish. I said, can I say yes? Can I say yes now? And then there was hugs, and I had the ring in my finger. And I was like, can I give you the ring? She goes, oh, yes, the ring. So, no, it was a really nice moment. It was just the two of us, and I think I managed to catch her by surprise as well.
So then the internet explodes into, I wonder if she made engagement chicken. And I was like, what? Engagement chicken? That's a thing? There's an engagement chicken? And apparently, this came from Glamour magazine. It has evolved since then. In 1982, there was a recipe featured at Glamour magazine, a chicken recipe. And the women who worked at Glamour started using it. And fast forward 30 years, and now the magazine claims that 70 couples have been married after the engagement chicken was served. Apparently it works, which is kind of interesting. Producer James is here and just still a newlywed.
Yeah.
You got married in October?
In October. Yeah.
So are you going to share your proposal story?
Yeah.
Is it a good one? I don't know this story.
I think it's a good one, but given the road that we took there, it's a little surprising and funny. So my wife's favorite spot ever is Niagara Falls. And we had family from Winnipeg that were coming in that week. I had all this planned out. I had the ring already, and I wanted to make sure that when I did propose, my family was also here from Winnipeg. So they were all going to Niagara Falls the day that I planned on proposing, but I told them that we would meet them in Niagara Falls after I proposed. So I took her unwillingly and surprisingly to Casa Loma, as she thought that she was going to Niagara Falls. Well, on the way there, when I told her that we weren't going to Niagara Falls, she got really mad at me and upset. And then we did like the Casa Loma tour and stuff like that. And then right on one of the balconies on the in Casa Loma, I think it was the room of the wife of the man who made the castle.
Yeah.
We were outside on a balcony overlooking the gardens, and you could see the Toronto skyline in the background. Then all of a sudden, this weird moment just happened where everyone that was on the balcony as we got out there just kind of ended up clearing out. And it was just the two of us. So she kind of looked at me and she said, well, even though this wasn't what I was expecting, it was still a nice day. And then I looked at her and I said, well, we're here for a reason. And I pulled out a ring and got down on one knee and I said, will you marry me?
Wow, you put a lot of thought and effort and deception into it. Yeah. I love it. Okay, yeah. Paulie, you got 30 seconds to tell yours.
There's really not much to tell, honestly. We got married in Vegas, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're planning the trip to Vegas a month before. And we just kind of casually got talking. Should we get married while we're there? And, you know, we started looking up, you know, different chapels. And do we want Elvis? Do we not want Elvis?
So the trip was the catalyst to the engagement.
Yeah, that's right. There was no formal get down on one knee, will you marry me? It just kind of happened while we were planning our trip to Vegas.
See? Both yeah. ways. One spontaneous and kind of what do you want to do? Beautiful and perfect. And yours planned out and deceptive. Also beautiful and perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know, boys. I think I'm going to have to try the engagement chicken. I think that's the point I'm at right now.
I don't think I served engagement chicken, though, beforehand. So
you didn't. I'm going to try it. It is 9:28. Emotionally intelligent toys for Christmas. We're going to talk to Ria Lala. She's a parenting coach from buildgreatminds.com about what that means and what we should add to our shopping list. That is next after the news at 9:30 on 570 News.
There's never a dull week on Parliament Hill. We've got you covered on the week's events with McLean's on the Hill political podcast. Available online on 570news.com.
Tis the season when the neat freak in me gets trumped by the children, because they want to keep all the flyers and the catalogs and all the kind of stuff that has toys inside, and they circle them and they make lists to Santa, and it's a really fun thing for them to do. I mean, we don't have the wish book anymore, do we? That's gone. And I don't know, I just remember doing that as a child, and it was just so much fun to flip through and kind of, you know, make some wishes and some choices about what you thought you'd like for Christmas. What is an emotionally intelligent toy? Gosh, I'm struggling this year because I have three boys who are at the age where really they love video games. So we've been encouraging them to come up with some stuff that's not tech related, some stuff that makes them move maybe. When I said, I need you to pick something that's going to make you get some exercise, they were all like, Nerf guns. And I was like, okay, well, I asked for that, didn't I? It does. It makes them move. It makes them run. So if you're struggling with some of those questions too, how do we kind of steer them away from tech? Not that, you know, they can't have tech. It's just can't be all tech. And if you're wondering what an emotionally intelligent toy is, well, you are in luck, because joining us this morning is Rhea Lala. She's a parenting coach from buildgreatminds.com. Rhea, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so what do we do in this age of tech to steer the kids perhaps into adding something else to their list? And then we'll talk about what an emotionally intelligent toy means.
Well, this is really about balance. So we get it. The kids like their video games. They like building things on Minecraft. And, you know, maybe even like doing, I think Minecraft is a lot about creativity. But it's about how can we build in balance. And in toy stores nowadays, the options, there are a lot of things that build IQ. So you're building methodical, logical, analytical, systematic thinking. And a lot of times with some of the building games, for example, you can build that skill, right? A lot of left brain activities going on. There's even a lot of things in toy stores that are building your CQ or creative intelligence. So this is where you get into design or the story. This is where you get into creativity and imagination. So there's a lot of options there. But what's missing, I think, in toy stores right now are things that build your EQ, which is emotional intelligence.
And, you know, we just talked last week about how there was a great article, and I'm not going to quote the source because, frankly, I might misquote it now, about how by the age of five, that emotional IQ is so important and can predict a lot of things. I mean, getting A's in math and English is wonderful, but the kids who were scoring higher with those EQs were going on to be more successful, to be attending college more frequently, to have less involvement in criminal activity, less involvement in drugs. So this is really crucial to the life and happiness of our kids.
Absolutely. In fact, the research shows, the neuroscience shows, that there's a really small window of opportunity for us to build an emotional foundation with our kids. So there's this critical time frame when the neural pathways are being formed. And it goes even further than that. If we look at globalization and how competitive things are getting, how automated things are getting, you know, our culture has really changed. There's a time that the knowledge worker reigned supreme, but we're really moving into a conceptual age. And in a conceptual era, the demand for workers who are skilled and guided by right brain thinking, kids that have cultivated skills from an early age, who can now focus less on details and in a global market think holistically, almost like think about it as kids that are able to read the conversation that's happening under the conversation. So these are things that are very difficult to automate. These are very things that are very difficult to outsource, right?
Right.
So if you can build that in your children now so that they can start honing and developing these skills, then they're going to really have an advantage in the future for many different reasons.
Because we'll have machines that can, you know, do the black and white things. But like you say, it's those underlying tones, those connections and relationships in sales and marketing and meetings with actual human beings that we'll be needing those skills in.
Right. From many different cultures, many different countries. So being able to read those subtle cues of human interaction is huge. So, I mean, when we're talking about an emotionally intelligent toy or tool that builds EQ, what we're really talking about are things like this, awareness. So how self-aware are you about the feelings that you're having at any given moment of time? What are you feeling and why are you feeling? And not just in yourself, but in others. Can you read what someone's going through at any given moment in time and why they feel that way?
And do you care? Do you care? Honestly, I mean, like, I often the empathy is really something. Like, for example, they had a situation with a couple of our kids this weekend where, you know, they were doing this kind of exchange, making this deal like, okay, well, you can have this and if you give me this. And I was really trying to convey, like, sometimes we can be nice to people we love without having an expectation that we're going to be rewarded or get something in return. I don't know if I succeeded on delivering that message, but keep repeating myself.
Well, that's where the onus falls on us, just as you're doing as parents, to see how we can build these skill sets in our kids. And it can be a really fun, beautiful process. I always say that a human being is a human feeling. I feel, therefore I am. And if kids can learn from a young age how to navigate emotional terrain, I believe it's one of the most important skills a child can have, because this is what creates a resilient and successful adult. If a child can notice, identify, and map their feelings, it's probably one of the greatest contributions that we can make to their well-being in life.
Okay, so I have three questions. So so how do we do that then? How do we encourage them to notice, identify, and map those feelings? How do we help that as parents, especially when there are some grown adults who still struggle with that as well, with self-awareness?
Right. So self-awareness is really understanding your own inner mind. That's the first part. And so there's a lot of, to understand your own inner mind, you're not ever going to figure out what you're feeling if you're spending time, this is going to sound really weird, but if you're spending time in your head. So for example, Jennifer, if somebody got you angry and you're running through, oh, they got me angry and why did they say this and they should have said that. What they're doing is you're running a story and you're creating meaning from it. Mm-hmm. So for kids to become self-aware, feelings are psychosomatic. And so somatic means it's in the body. And so kids have to start to get used to going into their body because that's where the feeling lives. If I were to crack open your head right now, I can't find that anger lives in this corner of your brain. However, if I was a doctor and checked your physiology, your heart rate, your cortisol level, your adrenaline levels, where the blood has rushed to, your blood pressure, I can see that you have the physiology of anger. So for kids to start becoming self-aware and you go into your body to actually be with the feelings, then you can begin to start becoming aware of, oh, I'm actually feeling anger, or I'm feeling jealousy, or I'm feeling loneliness. Aha! And then now you can sit with the loneliness and stay with it, because mm-hmm. now we're going to want to run. And if we don't run and we stay with it, then you're going to get to the epiphany or the gem or the jewel that's on the end of that tether of staying. And that's really how you access, like, your unconscious of what's going on inside.
Yeah, so that whole, and it's, we kind of try to find like words to use to help them, you know, because it's very wordy and it's very kind of, there's a lot of theory in there. So I often try to say, okay, so how are you feeling? What are you feeling? It's okay to feel mad, and it's okay to be mad, and it's okay to stay in that anger, because we tend to want to rush uncomfortable feelings away, which doesn't really serve the child, does it?
No, and that really stems from, I think, for a lot of us, as an adult, we are uncomfortable. We're uncomfortable with our own jealousy and our own rage. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do we say to our kids? Smile for the picture. Joy mm-hmm. is good, jealousy bad.
Yeah.
So we already start to hierarchy feelings. Tap, tap, tap. Don't feel this way. Don't be angry. So we've already marginalized and hierarchied feelings. So one way to start moving away from that is to, first of all, as a parent, start recognizing your own feelings. If you're ever you're going to guide your kids out of the dark, it's because you're leading as a parent. So your own self-awareness, really, your child's development is going to hang in the balance of your own self-awareness right. as the parent and the leader. Yeah.
You said, you mentioned that, you know, we have a small kind of window to create that, or to help encourage that emotionally and that emotional intelligence, and to kind of, you know, help instill it and help it grow. Is that an age window?
It is. It is an age window. So from the time, so we know that the brain is plastic. We know that the brain can change itself. But what they found is between the ages of 0 to 12 mm-hmm. is a very, very critical period for brain development. And really, it's like you're laying all the superhighways of neural networks in your child's mind.
Right.
And so if you, at that age, can start building through perspective-taking games, I just invented, I figured there's nothing out on the market, so I invented my own toy called Suzy Q. And what that does is really starts getting kids and parents aware of all the different feelings, words. So just allowing your children to have a robust emotional vocabulary. So words like jealous, lonely, insecure, and then not only you sharing stories, but with my doll, Suzy Q, which you stick it to the part of the body that the feeling lives. So now the child starts to recognize, oh, wait a second, the feeling is in my body. And then they can show you exactly where they're feeling the feeling. Is it in their chest? Is it in their back? Is it in their stomach? And then they also get a really robust emotional vocabulary. So now instead of your kid going into a tantrum or freaking out, what they can say is, Mom, I'm actually feeling really jealous that, you know, the guy, my friend scored the goal and I didn't.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't have to morph into anger. And then you have a tantrum that you have to deal with.
And try to unravel and figure out where it's coming from. Yes. Oh, I like this. Okay. So Suzy Q, where do we get this doll? Are you going to sell these to us? We need
Absolutely.
These.
These need to be in all toy stores. So if you go to Kickstarter and you type in Suzy Q, you'll see everything that it has to offer and why this is amazing. It comes with a book. It comes with a backpack with 20 fantastic words, not happy, mad, and sad, those are boring.
Yeah.
Get into what kids really feel, which is they feel jealous and insecure and lonely.
Yep.
So it comes with that. It comes with that. There's a boy version, Simon, and there's Suzy Q, of course, because she builds EQ and you stick them to parts of the body, and it comes with a really fantastic book. So if you go to Kickstarter, type in Suzy Q, you'll be able to see what's available for something different that you can offer your children and start building this right now.
Our guest this morning is Rhea Lella. She's a parenting coach from buildgreatminds.com, another place to go for great, great resources. Any other toys, Rhea, that you would, you know, kind of encourage us to, you know, perhaps invest in when it comes to things that our children could use, perhaps some things that are easily accessible for us? Any kind of, you know, things that come to mind?
Yeah, I'm going to give you one, but I'm going to give you one that actually saves you money. Okay.
Oh, good.
And this is a perspective-taking game, and it's one of the most fun games. We played it from the time we were 4 years old, and it's this. you ask your kids questions. So instead of how you're feeling, right, you want to get your kids to try and climb into other people's mind and into their own mind. So you create a scenario. So the scenario could be something as simple as this. There's lots of them. There's a child in your class that always pushes and hits other kids. He bosses everyone around and bullies you at times too. And then you ask your children, what do you know is true? So this is now you're getting out of the story. Oh, which gets out of he's just a mean kid.
Yep.
And starts getting into like something a bit deeper. How do you know it's true? So again, gets them out of the story. And the perspective taking question you ask is, what do you think the kids, that child is feeling? Why do you think they're behaving this way? What are you feeling? Why do you think the bossy child behaves this way? And how many reasons can you come up with to explain why he or she bullies or bosses people around?
Yes.
That's the key. Because when you do that, it gets them out of just one truth and into multiple truths. And then they can choose the one that's best serves the most, you know, the most abundant, beautiful way to view the world. So that's a really fun exercise you can play.
It costs nothing.
And it costs nothing.
Yeah. Ray, something just popped into my head as I'm listening. Have you seen the movie Wonder yet?
Oh my gosh. Fell in love with it. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. My son, my baby took me on a date to see it last night and wanted to spend his own money. And just, he was lovely and kind and generous. Anyway, that scene where that little boy who's the bully in class ends up in the principal's office with his mother, who's clearly, you know, obviously a bully too. And my 7-year-old said to me, Mommy, that's why he's like that, because his mommy is like that. So I just had this moment of feeling like, oh my gosh, my kid gets it, that hurt people.
Yes. And it's so important, because then you build empathy and compassion.
Yes.
And not just, that is so beautiful for him at 7 to be able to do that. Fantastic.
I was a pretty proud mom last night when he did that. So yeah.
You should be. Yeah.
You are a joy to have on, and thank you so much for always being available to us when we need you, which is all the time, because parenting is hard.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rhea. BuildGreatMinds.com is the website. Great stuff from Rhea this morning. Oh, I just love... Can I just talk about that for a second? Although he was a normal 7-year-old, too, in a couple ways. Like, so he says, Mom, I want to take you on a date. And of course, like, I'm an emotional human being. Surprise. That made me cry. And he's like, I want to use my own money. So that made me cry. And then I was just so excited he picked the movie Wonder, which, please take your children to see this movie. Please take your moms. It ain't easy. This movie ain't easy. I was just bawling from like the beginning to end, because you relate so much to the mom who's played by Julia Roberts about how hard it is for her to push her son into this world that she knows is going to be cruel and mean to him sometimes. But oh my gosh, it's just so, and my kid kept saying, why are you crying? And I said, because it's hard to be a mom. I know it's hard to be a kid, but it's hard to be a mom sometimes too. And you really do feel a lot of empathy for her, you know, because she knows she just wants to encompass her son, her little Augie, and keep him safe. And we know we can't. I mean, we can't do that. Our job is to raise him up and let him go. Anyway, so what I just kept saying to Asen, to my little guy, I'm like, I'm so happy you asked me on this date, and it just makes me so proud of you, and I love the movie you picked. So once he knew I was tooting his horn, I think I probably tooted it a little too much, because he couldn't wait to tell everybody. Anybody in the lineup for the popcorn, anybody in the bathroom, I'm taking my mom on a date. I'm taking my, like, just so he would get the praise from the strangers. So he's lovely, but he's still a little braggy, is all I'm saying. He's a wonderful child, but, you know, he's still a kid. It is 9:49. What is the problem with using the pronoun that somebody asks you to use? I really don't get it. Let's talk about this. Is this about freedom? Is it about free speech? What's the problem? And do you have one? *570-519-570-2545. Because I'm really interested in knowing if you're not just a jerk. This pronoun war. We've heard all of the sides, from that U of T professor Jordan Peterson to, of course, Lindsay Shepherd, the teaching assistant who faced the disciplinary hearing at Laurier. Like, I don't understand why you just can't call people what they want. Like, producer Polly, if you said, actually, I prefer to be called Justin, I'd be like, all right, Justin, that's your name. I don't understand why people, what's your problem? Why not? What? How does it affect your life? Tell me, if you're not just a jerk and you have an actual reason, is it because those pronouns often relate to someone who was born biologically a he that now wants to, that now does identify as she? Is it a problem with the they, which I know is a struggle? Let's get into that next on 570 News.
home for the Toronto Maple Leafs is 570 News.
Okay, so we've heard a lot lately about, from the conservative. Is he conservative? I don't know. We had him on the show, Jordan Peterson, U of T professor, that tell us that non-binary gender pronouns are kooky. They're kooky. It's just crazy talk. And that people who request us to use them, or along with the bill, C-16, is it like a thought police conspiracy to steamroll freedom of speech? Those people on the right, I'm going to say the right side of this, say society should not accept such requests. I just don't, if somebody said, and again, I'll use this example, this is the only example that, the best, if I wanted to be called Ms. Campbell, or Mrs. Campbell, or Mr. Campbell. See, that's when people get upset, though, isn't it? Because I don't think it is about the gender part. Because again, if I said, my name is Jennifer, but I want you to call me Jen. And you were like, well, no, I'm just going to call you Jennifer because I want to. Then you're just a jerk. Why? What's the big problem with calling people what they want to be called? Let's go right to the phones because they are lit up. Star 570. Hey, Mark. Mark?
Can you hear me?
Hi, Mark. Yeah, go ahead. I got about 39 seconds.
Okay, the largest concern is not the fact of whether you're a jerk or not. I would imagine the majority of people would be quite interested in addressing people as they would prefer. The problem with Bill C-16 is that it codifies into law that you must say those things. Otherwise, you are being hateful.
But nobody's going to haul you off to jail. I mean, come on. That's inciting some kind of idea, some conjured image of, good people who said the wrong they, he, she being carted off to prison. Like, that's not going to happen. We know our good sense tells us that, does it not?
I don't know. Common sense isn't all that common. We must recall that almost any single petty bureaucratic regulation or law, someone is going to enforce that. It's just the nature of the law. The books, the law's on the books, and people will enforce it. So it's okay to be to have someone say, can you say this or can you say that? Yes or no. But if someone says, no, I refuse to call you that, I would prefer to call you by your given name.
Right. But you wouldn't say that if I just said, I want you to call me. It wouldn't come up. If it was me saying, I want to be called Jen, it wouldn't even come up, right? So it is a gender issue. It is a trans issue.
But if I refuse to call you Jen and instead call you Jennifer,
then you're a jerk.
Before the Human Commission.
Well, okay. But what I'm saying is the inspiration is completely different because you just wouldn't do that. So underlying tones. There are
Ms. Was brought forth by Ms. Magazine. It didn't require the force of law to bring that in.
And nobody's. I'm sorry, but come on, Mark. Nobody's going to be hauled to prison for using the wrong pronoun. I got to go because Bill's. I got to go, Mark. Sorry, Bill. Hey, Bill. How are you?
Hey,
it's
morning,
in the law. It's in the law because people are jerks. That's why it's in the law, Bill. Sorry. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Well, let's remember first thing, nobody likes to be told anything typically, and I think it's pretty much rooted in pride. But in the same token, it's more than just a name or a pronoun. I mean, really, you're telling people how to think and what to believe. I think that seems to be the issue. I don't think it has to do with hate or people being jerks, but people want to form their own opinion and own belief.
So, but why do you...
Just, I mean, that infringes on it.
But if you want me to call you he or Bill, right? He or Bill, right? Is that what you want me to call you?
Sure.
Okay, so why does it bother you so much if somebody else wants to be called something else?
Well, we use, first of all, you and I use words to communicate, so we know what the hell each other, we know what we're talking about,
sure.
First of all. So, for certain belief systems, that would be promoting confusion because we use words like blue is blue because we said blue is going to be blue and red is red because red is going to be red. So a lot of times when we use words, we use them so that you and I understand each other. And some people's belief systems would say that this is promoting confusion. And some people don't believe in chaos, confusion. They believe in order. So each word represents something. So, because words are important. So
okay, they are important. They are. And I think
it's a bigger picture than just...
It's not. In what kind of society does the sentiment, you can't make me, constitute a compelling argument?
I don't know if it's really about that. I think it's just people want to be able to afford...
So if I called you William, if you said William,
that is my name. Yes.
Then and then you said, but don't call me that. I'd be like, all right, I won't call you that. Like, why do we care? Well, I got to go to John. I have 30 seconds for John. Sorry, guys. I know people are gonna be mad. I'm hanging up on everybody. Hi, John. I have 30 seconds and I'm way over.
Oh, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, how are
you? Love your show.
Thank you.
When the programmer asks and says, "Hello, what's your name?" I said, "John." Okay, John. We'll get John in a minute. That's it.
Yeah.
It's so simple.
Why do we care so much?
I don't take mind reading pills in the morning.
But if I said, "Hey, John, today I would like for you to call me Whiskey Unicorn," would you hate me for that? You might think she's a little weird, but she wants to call me.
Well, you got a heck of a horn between your eyes.
Okay, John, thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you so much. The thing is, please don't tell me it's not, that it's anything other than being transphobic. I mean, it is. Because again, if producer Polly wants me to call him Justin tomorrow, I'll be like, all right, Justin. So anything deeper than that, let's just be honest about it. Let's just be honest about it. If you say they or she or he, you're not going to go to prison, people. You're not. Trust me, I've broken way bigger laws than that, and I still have my freedom. Did I just confess to something? All right, I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Mr. Farwell's on his way in here. That was super fun. And please send along more emails. We can talk about it again tomorrow. Jennifer at 570news.com. Probably should have put that at the beginning of the show for more of the phone calls. But you know what? We can do it again if you guys want to. Thanks so much for your time.